We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Craig is usually a fan of water cooler talk, but it's draft season, and that's all anyone wants to talk about. The Athletic has loads of articles about this year's draft. But Greg doesn't have The Athletic, so now he's filling up his water bottle in the bathroom sink. Which, to remind you, is the sink people use after they use the bathroom. Get The Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
Folks, it is the midweek edition of College Sports Now. I'm Stephen Hartzell. We are joined by Wayne Cook, former UCLA quarterback, and Michael Felder from Stadium TV. I will be seeing both of you gentlemen in Indianapolis a couple days from now. We got a national championship game, Georgia, Alabama, the rematch. We got to talk about the semifinals. I got to get y'all's reaction to that. But first and foremost, my guys, Happy New Year. I haven't talked to y'all since the calendar flipped over to 22. So how y'all living?
Wayne, you go ahead.
Yeah, and you know what, Felder, man, Happy New Year to you. Steven, Happy New Year. Serber, we're going to miss you tonight. Happy New Year to you. I'm excited. I try not to get too wrapped up in you know, everybody, oh, thank God that year's gone. Now we've got another one. I've always been convinced as a guy that likes history as much as I do that we've had a whole bunch of crappy years in the history of mankind. And there's always something new to be angry and grumpy about, so I just choose not to. I'm stoked that we got a football season. You guys all know that my football season with UCLA ended on a down note.
I don't even want to talk. I don't even want to talk about it, Wayne. I don't even want to drag you through the coals on that. I really don't.
We were at an alumni event, and it basically the announcement was we're about to talk to a couple of coaches, and we were going to tell everybody how great it was to have them there, and. The next thing you know, we're introducing Martin Jarmond, and he's getting up on stage, and it was just an absolute. And then you have to deal with the aftermath because, you know, and Felder, I want you to say Happy New Year too. But since I brought it up, it's just so crazy that everybody has extremely strong opinions on everything now, and that the internet has created this world with social media where people just completely lose their minds. And then the next thing you know, it's just an absolute. Just cluster of UCLA players didn't want to play. They're a bunch of chickens. I'm like, people can just absolutely just shut up. If you know anything about any college athletes, that's not true at all. And it's just I'm just so over that crud. But that is absolutely the world that we live in today. But other than that, and that was hard, we still made the best of it. We still had a lot of fun in San Diego that night. So we made the best of it. And Happy New Year. And we're going to have a great year this year, too.
I agree with you. I thought it was very frustrating to see the people being like, they didn't want to play. They didn't want to play. They didn't want to lose. You took away a chance for NC State to get to 10 wins, yada, yada, yada. Like it's a circumstantial thing that no one wanted to have happen, but it happened. And I think the big thing, and you kind of hit the nail on the head, because one of the biggest stories coming out of this is that like players don't care about college football. They don't love football the same way. And I just was like, whoa, whoa. Like you don't get to say that when we've got guys that are getting up at 6 a.m. and doing the workouts. And you can correct me if you think I'm wrong, Wayne, but the way that guys are working out, the way that they're taking care of their diet, the way that they're dialed into their bodies is so much more advanced now than ever. You can't do that if you don't love this game, love this sport, want to be a part of this sport.
So here's what's really fun. This was my last topic, and I did a little research because I do like Kirk Herbstreit quite a bit. Mm-hmm. I think he's great. I think he's articulate. I think he loves the game. I just think he's good at what he does. I really do. And so I went and I found his podcast, okay? And so mm-hmm. him, and I believe it's Matt Berry, and I listened to his explanation. And if you're willing to take the time, and I did retweet sure. it to listen to it, the first 16, 17 minutes of it, he really talks about what he was saying. And he really wasn't saying that all players don't like it. But I've heard this from many coaches, too. I've heard it from coaches that have told me this more than once, that football players, a lot of them don't even really watch football anymore. We grew up, and I know I'm older than a lot of people right now, but like the idea that like I grew up where every Monday Night Football I watched, every single – the games that we were allowed to watch because we didn't get to see them all, the ones that were on TV – we watched them. We watched college football. We watched pro football, and we watched these games so much. And a lot of coaches will tell you that a lot of athletes now they're playing video games and they're watching YouTube videos and they're doing other things. And it's like, that was a little bit a part of it. But the other idea that I think he explained and he went into detail on, and I kind of did write some stuff down here, was just that he feels like right now everybody's so wrapped up and all these guys think they're going to be NFL guys. And by the way, that hasn't changed. All of us, when I played, we all thought we were going to be two. But we all know the numbers, and that's not true. As a matter of mm-hmm. fact, the generational wealth guys is like 1% of them. 99% aren't going to make a living playing football. And even when they're done, if they play a little bit, they're going to have to fall back on their education. And he talked about this. He talked about education. He talked about
you're going to have to get a job.
You know, the people that you meet. He talked about, you know, the relationships you create and all this stuff that's so valuable. And he talked about how he just feels like, you know, with the transfer portal and NIL and all this stuff. And I don't necessarily say he was thinking that all this stuff is bad, but I do get the idea, because I said this on this show a while back. I said, there will be, and Steven, you can vouch for me. I said, there will be unintended consequences.
Mm-hmm.
And we're seeing it. I mean, UCLA's been at the center of so much. Like, we had Dylan Gabriel that was coming to UCLA.
Not anymore.
And, you know, recruiting, and he's not anymore because now he's going to Oklahoma. We had a player that left high school early in Quinn Ewers that made six figures mm-hmm. and didn't even really play. And now he's going to make seven figures at another school before he even plays. This has turned into what I was afraid of the whole time. I wasn't afraid of players getting more money. I wish there was more equity in it when it wasn't just individual players, that more of like the team could get more money. Mm-hmm. But it bothers me that we're going to start using this as a recruiting tool. And I just think that this is so far out of the box right now. I don't know how they're going to reel this in, you guys. I think it's absolute insanity right now. And you can't have a kid commit to you and then later on in a transfer portal say, oh, by the way, because you may have landed three other recruits that came because of that kid.
Mm-hmm.
And then everybody goes, nope. I mean, it's just an absolute – it's crazy. But I do challenge you guys to listen to what Kirk Herbstreit said if you want to go find that podcast.
I listened to it.
It was really – did you listen to it?
Yeah, I listened to it because I wanted to hear the explanation. And obviously I saw his tweeted out explanation, but I listened to like the long form explanation. The biggest thing for me and my kind of big takeaway, Wayne, was you just have to get better. Like, you have to be better. And that's for coaches. And I think it's also, and we've talked about this before, you know, we've kind of brushed up against this topic, but it's also for parents, right? Like, it's all right. Like, there's all these elements that have to be better. And it's not, I don't want the tail wagging the dog guy. What I want is for these guys to be equipped to handle everything that happens. And right. I'm sure you were as lucky as I was to have folks at home that were able to guide you and steer you and point you in the right direction. And I think it's one of those things, like I've been in, this is on a smaller scale, but I've been in arguments with people when I tell them, I was like, you can shut down your recruiting. Like, we don't need the early signing day. You can shut down your recruiting if
absolutely.
You want it. Yeah. And people are like, you can't shut down your recruiting. They'll keep calling. And I was like, no, you can shut it down. You tell them, if you call during dinner or you call now, I will not go there. It's not happening. And they have to respect that. And so I think that there's a problem of control and not controlling the players, but helping the players find ways to control things. And I think there is, I love that there's more agency with respect to players, but I also think the players have to know what to do with that agency. And
right.
I think that goes into, and I think that there are certain schools that are doing a really good job with giving their players the tools they need to succeed. But I also think that we live in a, like, the reality of it is, I mean, when you see a grown adult talk about how he's not taking another job and then he decides to leave that, like, in 3 days, who's setting the example for these guys, right? Like, who's setting the example? Yeah. And that's a big, like, when you see an athletic director say he's going to retire here and then he decides to up and leave somewhere else.
Right.
Like, who's setting the example? When you see, right, like, when you see all these things happen, that's an issue. And so,
right,
I'm never, with a handful of exceptions, obviously, I'm usually not going to put the blame on these kids. But I am going to put the blame on, and I understand, most people, their parents don't play college football, or their parents don't play college sports. So, which is why, like, one of the McCaffreys, they're unicorns. Because both of their parents played college sports, right, so they understood the process. Most people, they don't understand the process, so they don't have as good a grip on it as other people. I'm in a family right now. Not right now. Gee, right now, what the fuck? No, I'm in a family. I'm in a family. I'm in a family, and my wife's cousin is done playing college football. But all the way on his recruiting, the lead up, I kept telling them what college football was like, and they didn't believe me.
Right.
I was like, once he gets there, they won't care. And once he can't help them, they also won't care. So he needs to make sure he's happy here. Otherwise, it's not going to work for him. And they were like, no, he's different. They're different. Michigan State's different. But it's not different. And this is something, and Wayne, let folks know. Me and you, my wife's cousin, anybody that's playing college football right now, star or scrub, our college experience is more similar than the guy that lives next door to us in a dorm.
Yeah. So this is interesting because I was lucky enough to have, my dad played football at University of Arizona, so I did right. have some advice, and I had some, but it was a different time. I mean, you know, his mm-hmm. stories were
leather helmets, like, right, Wayne? I mean, leather helmets.
Don't do that.
We watched. He's not that old. He's not that old, but he did, like, when we watched The Junction Boys. I don't know if you guys have seen that movie.
I've seen it.
My dad snickered. My dad snickered at the fact that it was similar to that. Yeah. So when he had a coach that came in to take over Arizona, his name was Coach LaRue, and I've heard this story many times. He said he tried to run. They tried to work people so hard that they would quit. Yeah. And then he'd find out who he had left, and then they made a team out of it. And he ended up playing on a team that was really, really good his junior year. But the idea that we did have some advice, but here's where it does vary a little bit. And I know I'll say this at UCLA, and I'm not disagreeing with anything you say. And what I'm trying to get at is I'm not always on the side of this should be like the old days and the player shouldn't get anything.
Sure.
But I'm not on the new side of right now where it's a free-for-all. It's the wild, wild west. It's just right. It's just absolute insane. I'm like, we've got to have some structure.
You don't think the market will correct?
I think the market, go ahead.
I was going to say, but you're a history guy, and you understand this as well as anyone. The market's going to correct.
What does that look like, though, Felder? What does that look like, though,
Felder? I don't know what that looks like. Exactly. The market might correct, but like my whole thing is I was trying to explain this to someone the other day, and let me finish my previous thought first. The idea that, like, when I went to play football for Terry Donahue at UCLA, I never felt like I was a piece of meat. I always felt like I was – now, granted, I was a quarterback, but, you guys, I was not. I was recruited in the same class with Tommy Maddox, who was a number one and, like, one of the best players in the nation. Bert Emanuel, who was one of the most athletic dual-threat quarterbacks back before they even called him that in the nation. And then there was me. I was in a magazine where it said unknown quarterback because my high school teams kind of stunk, at least my junior and senior year. But when I got there, I always felt like, you know, when people talk about having, like, you know, it's not your dad, but it's the closest thing to it. I always felt like that. I always felt like my position coach was that way. I always felt like, you know, my coach, I always felt like they were there for me. Like, even when I was a complete piece of crap and I wasn't going to study hall and I was getting bad grades and they were up at 5 o'clock in the morning pushing me because I will tell people this forever. All of those moments that I went through, even where I almost got kicked out of UCLA for bad grades, all the people that went to bat for me and stuck up for me, but also pushed me to a point to where I had to learn that I was wrong. Like, all those lessons that I learned were so valuable to me in my regular life. Now, granted, the whole time I was going to the NFL, shoot, I was surrounded by first-round draft choice Troy Aikman. I was Tommy Maddox was a first-round draft choice. Cade McNown right after me was a first-round draft choice. Like at UCLA at the time, we had a bunch of guys that were going, and so that was what I was going to do. I didn't know I was going to have a couple of knee injuries. I didn't know I was going to have arm problems. I didn't know I was going to have all these issues. But, like, the idea was is that when my playing career didn't work out, just like yours, Felder, just like mine, just like Roddy's, just like, you know, a lot of people that play this wonderful game that are really good elite athletes, we still don't make a living doing that. I'm so worried that there's so many athletes nowadays because my coach also was there the whole time. He was coach for UCLA for 20 years. And when he retired, he retired a Bruin. You know what I mean? And he might have gone on and done other things, but he didn't coach anywhere else in college football. And there's a huge difference because, like what you're pointing out, is the adults are setting a terrible example. They're making so many millions that they're really going to be set for life, and they're asking for a couple more to make a lateral move to somewhere else. Mm-hmm. I wish those guys, to be honest with you, I wish we had a system in place where if you wanted to go for the big money, go try your hand in the NFL.
Right.
Because what's happened is all this money, and it's like you said, the market will figure itself out. How many, and this was my second point, Felder, and then you guys can respond.
Yeah.
My point, I looked this up earlier today, because everybody thinks, well, the rich, all these schools are making all this money. They're really not. Like, UCLA's in the hole right now. We've lost so much money over COVID. We lost a ton of money from the Under Armour deal. Like, it's not like the university is just rolling around in a vault, like of gold and just being like, woohoo, we're rich. They're spending that money on other sports teams. They're spending that money on better facilities. They're spending that money on – they're trying to keep up with the few schools that are actually making big money, and they are out there. But most college football programs – I should say athletic departments, because they're all connected, right? We all know that football makes way more than everybody else.
Everything.
Then men's basketball is next. And then after that, it's nothing. Nobody else makes money. Everybody else is paid for by those two programs. And so I don't know. I don't get it when people say that they're just rolling in the dough. I know there's a lot of money out there. I know people are making money. I do know that. I am aware of that. But the colleges are just trying to keep up. I think they love their traditions. They want to be good. They want to win. But it's so hard to compete. And now with the situation the way it is, I mean, really, you guys, we have completely overhauled the rules of college football. And you guys, we're seeing it. I'm sorry, and I'm going to say this. There have been a couple of good bowl games, but this bowl season sucked. I didn't like it at all. I'm watching a game in LSU where they had, what, 30-something college scholarship athletes playing? Mm-hmm. We got to make some rules. Like, players can't transfer until after the season. Maybe there's a contract that when you sign a scholarship, you have to finish the season. Then you can leave. Maybe we need to make a rule that coaches can't take a new job or they have to sit out a year until after the bowl games. My God, we've got to fix this. It's out of control.
Well, a couple things. One, so to address the most immediate point, I think that we're seeing this massive change in terms of guys sitting out, not just in transferring, not merely because of the early signing period, but the early signing period has now pushed coaches and coach movement forward.
Yes,
so
it has.
No one in that building, and you get the 15 bowl practices, no one in that building, maybe a guy might still be there. So what's the point?
Felder, that's an easy change too, right? Like, this one seems like a no-brainer. Just eliminate that early. Like, they've got
to
change.
I'd love for them to eliminate it. But, like, they won't. But and then to go backwards, feeling like a piece of meat and on the whole deal. So you had your same position coach and head coach and coordinator?
All the way through my senior year, Homer Smith went back to Alabama, and then I had Bob Toledo my senior year, which – by the way, though, because I had the same leadership, we did have some coaches come and go because that's part of the world.
Sure.
We had position coaches come and go. And Rick Neuheisel left before my senior year, too, and he was our receiver coach. So those two guys left my senior year, which was a bummer because, these are my guys. These are my offensive minds. And I had to completely change and, like, learn a new way of thinking. But looking back on it, it was a great benefit. But it wasn't like they left, like those guys left. Like Rick Neuheisel left because he was going to go become he went to Colorado and he wanted to be a head coach, whatever.
Right.
But,
he got a
like,
job.
Homer left because his wife lived in Alabama the whole time he was at UCLA.
So, and he wanted to be back home.
So he just had to go back to his family. So like it wasn't because he got paid a couple of million dollars extra. Like the money thing. And like,
Completely
let's face
different.
It, you guys. How often in the world, and that whenever we talk about any of this stuff, money, I'm telling you, man, it's not a bad thing. I'm not saying it's terrible.
No.
But when money's all we care about, it becomes a major problem. And there's a history of that. Money corrupts. Power corrupts. And right. I do worry about that.
We all lead good lives, and good lives that are fueled by football. I'm not saying that football doesn't bring good things, because we wouldn't be where we are without this sport. And that's the reality of the situation. What I'm looking at is, so I'll put it this way. I went to UNC to play for Jim Fleming. And Jim Fleming and Dave Huxtable. Dave Huxtable obviously was at Wisconsin. I think he's at North Carolina State right now. But they play a lot of cover three, or he was at that point playing a lot of cover three. Half-field defenses and a lot of cover three. Fleming was a cover three guy. So we played a lot. They played a lot of cover three. I fit into cover three.
Right.
We were 117th in defense my freshman year. And so those guys were both out the door.
Yep.
Goodbye. It wasn't that they didn't leave to get better jobs. They left to just try to have a job because they got fired. And so you get new coaches in, John Gutekunst, Marvin Sanders. And the next thing you have is, oh, I don't fit into this at all. And I was talking to someone, and I was like, we used to fight. Me and my position coach used to argue and just, like, not get along all the time. And so I understand when it becomes an ever-increasing revolving door, the idea that they don't want you there and they don't feel like you belong, that's hard. And then the other part of it is thinking about, I know guys. Like, one of my guys, Michael Briggs, played fullback. Guess what? We got a new offensive coordinator that didn't use a fullback. You know what they tried to do to all the fullbacks? Push him down the defensive line to play defensive tackle. And that was like, they were like, huh? Well, we can't. I'm not a defensive tackle. I'm a fullback. And they're like, well, we don't use a fullback. So get the fuck out. And it's one of those things where the experience has changed. Because did you hear what Lincoln Riley said in his opening presser? Where he said it's easy to turn over a roster.
Yep.
That how do you make like I remember in 2005 when Spurrier got hired at South Carolina, there were also rumors that he was going to get hired at UNC. And the whole thought process was, he does not like walk-ons, he does not like scrubs, he is going to get rid of all of you, and we were all terrified. Because we had a kid. I played with Will Long. Will Long is Brad Long's son. Brad Long is one of the best defensive line coaches in college football. He coached with Nick Saban at Michigan State. And he was just like, everything I've heard, he doesn't like, don't like him, can't use him, doesn't want any of you guys, going to upgrade the roster. And that's in 2005. Flash forward to 2021, and it's like, oh, he's going to turn this roster over. And then I'm glad you mentioned the education part, Wayne, because imagine if you're a third year sophomore and you have 75, 80 credits.
Right.
And they don't want you anymore.
Right.
But if you transfer somewhere else, they're going to bump you down to 50 credits.
Yeah, you might lose. Not all of them are transferable. That is very true.
And that's terrible. So you just have to stick around.
Yeah.
You just have to hang on. And I think that's all these things that like people don't think about. And like, if you're a third year sophomore, you've established who you are on that football team, who your friends are, what you do. You might have a girlfriend. You might have a long time. You might have a girl that you've been dating for 3 years.
Sup?
Yep.
What happened?
No, I was just saying sup to your girlfriend of 3 years. Oh.
Yeah, but like you can't, and you don't want to leave her. To what you want to leave?
Especially
USC?
When you're one of the, like the 98% that probably. Because let's be honest, like I'll be honest with you, I thought I was going to play in the NFL. I really did.
Sure.
And so, but the idea is there's a lot of people that kind of know after a while. Like
I knew. How long did it take for you?
I'm a solid college football player. Well, to me, I always thought that I could overcome my injuries. I always thought that I was going to be able, but when I was taking painkillers just to get through practice because my throwing arm hurt so bad, it's really hard to compete at that level when you're trying to just survive. And I didn't want to be. See, I was lucky enough to have parents that like taught me like I didn't want to like be that person that lived a very short life and just did anything I could just to survive. Right. I realized that I'm going to graduate. I can go back to school. I was dating someone, and I was like, you know what? I'm going to go back to school. I'm going to get my teaching credential. I'm going to get married, and I just moved on. I mean, I got calls to play in Canada. I got calls to play in the Arena League. I still remember getting a call from freaking Danny White. Remember the old Cowboys quarterback? I remember getting – I mean, it's hard to say no, but I kind of had to say, you know what? I'm done. Like, this isn't fun anymore. Everything just hurts. But but some players, and we're talking about this a lot, Felder.
Yes.
Some players are so freaking good. Well, some players can't give it up. That's true. But some players are so good that they know it, and they're right. Other players are delusional. Yes. And they're being told by their parents, and they're being told by outside sources, and they're being told by, and let's be honest, when you and I play, there's always agents hovering around, even when it was illegal. And they would tell you everything you wanted to hear. Mm-hmm. Because they're trying to get your business and they're trying to get your service and all that stuff. But I will go back and tell you this, like, because this is where this gets really confusing, and it's good to have both of us saying this stuff. I totally get why people transfer.
Yeah.
I look at a quarterback, like, if you're a quarterback and you've been paying your dues, like, just say you're Ethan, and I'm using UCLA as an example, but there's a million examples out there. Let's just say, or Jalen Hurts. Let's say Jalen Hurts. I interviewed Jalen Hurts a few years ago at the national championship, and this was the year when Tua took over. Remember Jalen came in and helped him win against Georgia, I believe?
Yeah.
And then, but he wasn't the starter, okay? And so we interviewed Jalen Hurts for our show, and he was awesome. He looked me straight in the eye and said, dude, he goes, my story's not over. He goes, I'm not just here to help. I go, I'm going to go on and do big things. And now he's a starter, and he's going to play in the playoffs. And he's doing a great job. And by the way, he's an overachiever, in my opinion. I thought he was a great athlete, but I think he just keeps getting better and better. And that's why the intangibles matter so much in these quarterbacks. And he's got intangibles, like, out the rear end. I mean, he's got so many of them. So, but anyway, my point is that he transferred for all the right reasons. I mean, that was a perfect example of a guy that was great, but got replaced by someone who may have been a little bit greater at that time. By the way, who's the greatest after all this is said and done is still unwritten. But that's a great example, especially now. And what you're talking about, Felder, is that with the transfers, I totally get what you're saying. New coaches, new way of thinking, new mindset. Sometimes you do have to move on. But sometimes we have players that move on, and they'll come in and they'll replace a kid that's one offseason away from being the starter. And now they're going to bring in someone else that hasn't been there. You've been there for 2 or 3 years. You waited your turn, and now you lose your spot. It's kind of like, I don't know how to fix it.
I think that's coaching, though. I think that's coaching. I think one of the things I don't think we discuss enough is coaches looking for easy fixes because they like those paychecks and they know that W's are what get those paychecks. So they're looking for the easiest route to a W. And I don't think we talk about that enough, but I do think that that is important because – these coaches, it's not just recruit, because it started, think about it. It used to be you recruited over top of your class, right? You didn't even let these guys develop. You just got somebody better that you thought might be better.
Right.
But now it's going to the portal and finding someone you can just plug in, and you don't have to worry about, you don't have to worry about actually coaching. You don't worry about building a relationship with the kid. You don't have to worry about developing a kid. And to me, that's a coaching issue. And that's why there's 3,000 kids sitting in the freaking portal, and
right. And by the way, not all of them are going to end up. It's not going to end up as rosy as they thought it was going to be.
Bingo. And what I was going to say, though, I realized that I couldn't. I realized I wasn't going to the NFL. My first week at UNC, when I was like, oh my God, these guys are fast. And then a couple weeks in, literally, this might be the best analogy that anyone's ever given me. They said, Felder, you are like Fast and the Furious, like Toyota Supra. And I was like, okay. They're like, you're hooked up. You've got everything you need. You can go pretty fast. He said, but most of these guys playing are Ferraris, and it's not the same. And I was like, got it. Yeah, thanks. Cool. Yeah. Cool, dude.
You know what's so funny is I had a similar story, and I'm gonna throw out his name because he's recently passed. This is an old teammate of mine that died of cancer. Last year, he was a great high school coach out here. His name was Jimmy Bonds. He was a Hart High School legend. He went to UCLA, played behind Troy Aikman, and he ended up getting benched in favor of Tommy Maddox. But he was one of my favorite teammates of all time because he was just a cool dude, absolute cool dude. He was like a coach on the sidelines. He handled this, you know, him getting benched with more class than just about anybody. Never thought about transferring. He loved being at UCLA. Like, he was just one of those guys. He just one day we're out of practice and I was young and I felt like crap and I just didn't think I was any good. I was a scout team guy and I threw a comeback out, you know, like from one hash to the other. And he just looked at me and says, dude, that he goes, dude, that's NFL. And I it was weird because like it's as soon as he said that, I just kind of went and I went, okay, maybe I can do this. Like maybe I can do. And then as the years went on, I kind of gained confidence and stuff like that. But it's amazing how a player or a coach or someone can say something to you that either can absolutely destroy you or it can lift you up in a way that like you he probably never knows that I even remember that. I can actually remember the like what the field was like that day, what the weather was like that day. I can see it in my brain when he said it. And I just remember as a young, you know, 19-year-old or whatever I was, I was just like, damn. I go, and it made me feel like I had a chance. So you never know, but – this stuff's nuts. Can I throw a couple more at you, Felder? Because I'm just I was just gonna say,
Jacoby Watkins is the guy that told me that. He, I don't know if he still holds the record, but he ran a 4.16, and I was like, oh my god! Like, I run a 4.58 at best. I run a 4.6. We're not the same, and it was just like. This is not. It's you're not going to get there. So, all right. What do you got? Throw something at me because I want to get to the title game too.
Let me. Let me add this to what you just said. For everybody listening, all of you, and I used to crack. I had brother-in-laws that when I timed on my pro day, I was a 4.9. I ran a 4.7 in high school. Two knee injuries later, you know, a little bit bigger. I wasn't quite as fast, but I used to look at people and they'd be like, "That's slow." I'm like, "Well, you want to race?" Yeah. And I would kick their butt. I said, it may be slow for whatever you regular think fast person. Is. I go, 4.5 and 4.6 is freaking fast. I go, it may not be NFL fast, but it's freaking fast. And someone posted something the other day about Jerry Rice being overrated, which was like the dumbest tweet in the history of mankind. And they were talking about his speed and his size. And then someone posted a bunch of highlights of him running away from people that are like really fast. And I'm like, you know, there's something called game speed. there's some guys that maybe don't fit all the numbers, but so I don't ever let any you are fast. That's better than most people, and you should be proud of the fact that because I'm gonna tell anybody this. Like there are some cruddy players that are on college football teams. There really are. There's some guys that show up and they only last a year or two, and they can't hack it. They're just not good enough. They can't play good enough. But there's a lot of guys that I played with that were walk-ons or players that were recruited lower than some of the guys with more stars, but they were pretty darn good players.
Yeah.
We had guys that transferred from Virginia colleges that were pretty darn good players. Mm-hmm. So I don't like it when people label people like that because it is hard to compete. When I was in two camps in the NFL, Felder, and it's very apparent. When you get out there, I mean, right away, you're like, wow, these guys are huge and they're fast.
Yeah.
It's absolutely crazy.
Yeah, it didn't hurt my feelings because at the end of the day, the big thing for me was like, yeah, I'm not that fast. Like, but it was also, and during this time, think about this. This is when Appalachian State was winning all these FCS championships, right?
Yeah.
And I remember like one of the guys that I was recruited against or that like that we were kind of slotted into the same bin was the kid Corey Lynch, who ended up going to the NFL. We had similar numbers and he ends up making one of the big plays for them against that Michigan game. And I was like, oh, I could have gone to a smaller school and done X, Y, and Z. But instead, I ended up at UNC. I could have even, like, I took a bunch of visits with my guy Kenny Moore, who ended up playing for the Panthers for a little while, and he went to Wake Forest, and I just didn't want to go to Wake Forest. So it's less me putting myself on. It's more just looking at, like, oh, I ended up at a place that was, like, a one level, two levels above of where I was going to get in the game. But I'll tell you what, when we played Maryland, I've never seen anything like it. When we played Maryland, when they had Vernon Davis.
Yep.
Oh my God. And I've never been, you know, when you're an athlete, you're not happy to not be in the game usually. But when we played Maryland and Vernon Davis was destroying all of my teammates, I was like, I'm so glad they're not going to put me in.
Dude, you know what's so funny when I hear about this? Like, so one of the guys that I played against that was like so obvious because he just looked the part. He still looks the part. So I played against Willie McGinnis, even on TV now, when you see him, you're like, dude, that guy looks like he was just built to be that guy. You know what I mean?
Oh yeah.
But it's funny. But I also played against Teddy Bruschi, and he didn't.
Right.
Teddy Bruschi was too slow. He was too slow. He was kind of looked pudgy. He didn't. Mm-hmm. He didn't run real fast. As a matter of fact, I outran him on a play, and I have proof of that. If you ever want it, but you know how we're talking about a guy that has all the measurables, and then a guy that has none of them. But it just talks about, like, sometimes you if you've got the heart, if you've got the, you know, if you got the study habits, because we don't ever talk about that enough. I mean,
dude, I'm excited.
Study matters so much.
I'm excited to talk about Georgia because I think that the most interesting thing about them that nobody else is really talking about is the fact that they study so much.
Yeah. Well, you know what? Let me go here first.
Okay,
Felder,
you go.
Because I do want to talk about Georgia, because I actually want to talk about I tend to be a little bit quarterback oriented. So
yes,
I do a 3-hour pregame show for the for the Rose Bowl every year, and it's really, really fun. And I was kind of arguing with my broadcasting partner about how I didn't think Ohio State would suffer that much from the opt-outs. Mm-hmm. Because I did some research, and Ohio State has 65 4- and 5-star players. Utah has 17.
Yep.
Okay, 65-17. That was a very good game. That was one of the few bowl games that I really enjoyed. I mean, Tennessee-Purdue was a great bowl game.
Yep.
Ohio State-Utah, it was just so fun. I thought it was a bummer that Cam Rising got hurt at the end of that game, but it was just an absolute great game. But when you have Marvin Harrison Jr., son mm-hmm. of the great Marvin Harrison, who comes off the bench and has a couple of touchdowns, even though he mm-hmm. hadn't had a big year, they are so loaded with talent.
They didn't
and I guarantee
to have
you those guys
year.
Get plenty of reps in practice.
Yeah.
But here's where I wanted to go. Here's where I wanted to go with this. The more I really thought about it, because I wasn't overly impressed with Bryce Young against Cincinnati, and you told me straight up he would have a hard time against those corners.
Mm-hmm.
He still had a good game. He still had good numbers if you just looked at him, but I thought he looked uncomfortable. I thought for a lot of the game, I thought Cincinnati did a very good job. I thought that game mm-hmm. was probably a little closer than the score.
Yep.
I thought Georgia looked much better in their game against Michigan. But I thought C.J. Stroud for Ohio State.
Mm-hmm.
I thought he was – I personally think at this point, I think he's a better quarterback than Bryce Young. I think he has better feet. I think he looks more like a quarterback. Bryce Young is awesome, but he looks like he's just kind of floating through things sometimes. I don't mm-hmm. think he always sets his feet. I think he kind of throws balls all arm a lot, and he's so talented he gets away with it. I just hope that a coach gets a hold of this guy and kind of has him tighten things up a little bit. If you watch him, he hands the ball off and stands and watches, which to me is an absolute cardinal sin for a mobile quarterback.
Right.
All you have to do is accelerate
engage
one way or the other for three steps. And you all you have to do is get a linebacker to just freeze for a second. And mm-hmm. and it's like a block. And I don't like that stuff. And I'm telling you, and I've watched CJ Stroud a ton, but when I really start watching him as a quarterback and I start looking at the way he moves his feet and he sets his feet and the way he throws and how accurate he is, how much touch he has on the deep ball, I mean, he just had every freaking throw. And I'm not saying that, but for all of you getting mad at me right now, like Bryce Young has that too. He does. I just think they should develop his footwork a little bit better.
Yeah.
And I also think, and I'll add this to this because we're going to talk about Georgia. In the Georgia game, Bryce Young looked much more enthusiastic about running. He doesn't always look enthusiastic about running. I think he knew in that game he was going to have to.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's the difference. If he goes up against Georgia a second time, it's like, you know what? I know I'm going to have to run and move. And I know you've told me this before. You didn't like the way Georgia had their game plan, right, on defense?
Right. So a couple things.
I know I said a lot. You can unpack it all. I don't know.
No.
I mean, I don't know how you feel about C.J. Stroud or not, but I thought he was so fun to watch.
I like C.J. Stroud a lot. I think that he is a better quarterback. I don't know that he's a better player. Does that make sense?
No, that's exactly see, this is where people get crazy because this is where I struggle. This is when we talked about Jalen Hurts.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I always worried about him in the NFL, and I still do, by the way. He's got all these intangibles that are going to carry him for a certain point. But at some point in time when all these quarterbacks get into the playoffs and they're playing against the best defenses,
mm-hmm.
that's why historically a slow quarterback that makes the great reads and can get the ball out on time, you know, the Tom Brady's of the world, that's why they can win in those games. So I always worry about the mobile quarterbacks that run around when they get into these really like elite defenses. Are they going to beat them with their mind, throwing the ball to space, getting the ball out on time? And I don't mean that smart, not smart, whatever. I just think certain quarterbacks have more talent throwing the ball.
Well, you know what? You know what? Hang on. There's a here because this is the thing that I know, Hartzell, you wanted to talk about, right? So let's talk about this through the lens of Caleb Williams.
Well, you've got a potential Heisman favorite and number one overall pick in a couple of years just sitting out there on the portal. I think it's crazy. I think it's wild. And I wanted to ask you guys about it because outside of the playoff, there's a lot hanging out there with Caleb Williams.
I'm not super impressed by him.
Okay. Why?
He doesn't know what he's doing.
He's raw. He's raw.
Thank you.
He doesn't know what he's doing.
This ties in perfectly. This is why you did the segue, Felder.
Yeah, that
ties
in
perfectly what I was just talking about. Yes.
Yeah, that's why I'm a professional at this. Come on. He doesn't know what he's doing. And then we watched him. Come on, let's think about this. Like game over game, right? So we watched the Texas game when he's a new hot commodity. Comes in, blows the doors off. Everything looks super cool. Amazing. This is great. And then you keep watching him. And then you see, he doesn't know what he's doing. 87 passing yards against Iowa State?
Yeah.
The Kansas game?
The Kansas game?
So slow down, Felder.
Baylor game? Your
defense, yep.
The man coverage confused him. Yeah, I am. Yes.
So no, this is why I have to ask you this. I hate to interrupt because I do that all the time. Steven knows this. But because you're a defensive guy, you know when a quarterback is a one-read or a two-read guy.
Bingo.
You know what you do, and you start reading their eyes. You start jumping them. Some quarterbacks, they're just kind of locked in, and you see it. By the way, I see it in the NFL more than I'd like to.
Yeah.
That there's quarterbacks that just can't do the things we're talking about. That some of the elite guys that last forever. There's a reason why Ben Roethlisberger, when he was young and could still run around and move, and he was great. But there's a reason why he lasted as long as he did. Even when he got where he looked like too big and looked like his feet hurt and looked too slow, because he was so freaking good at being able to read defenses. That's why quarterbacks last a long time. I don't mind if you're mobile or not. Shoot, Aaron Rodgers may be one of the most talented quarterback that's ever freaking lived. I mean, he's just unique. Like, he's like, that guy's like a unicorn in my opinion. Same with Patrick Mahomes. Those guys have so much talent. It's freaking ridiculous. But if they didn't know how to read defenses and throw to the right guys, their careers don't last that long. That's why so many guys fail.
I agree. I just and I'm not saying Caleb Williams is going to fail. What I'm saying is he needs someone to coach him and teach him.
Yes.
And that's okay to need someone to coach and teach you, because that's the whole point of growth when you get to the next level. I needed someone to coach and teach me about playing defensive back. Will Anderson needs someone to coach and teach him about being a pass rusher. Like, N'Kobe Dean even needed someone to coach and teach him about the playing linebacker. Like, they got to show you how to watch film and show you what to look for and all these things. That's what you're supposed to happen. The problem for me is when I watch him play and I recognize that it's 1-2 run, half field read. If you're playing half field against the team that's playing cover zero, and then you don't have a shot. It's over. And that's what Oklahoma State did. Oklahoma State, they got cute early, and then all of a sudden, you remember this, Hartzell? They put the clamps on them, didn't they?
Yeah. Yeah, it was a tale of two quarters. Yeah. I mean, here's the thing. I hear you on the Caleb Williams talk. You think he's –
Where should he go? Should he go to Georgia? I don't know that he's going to get coached the right way if he goes to Georgia, be quite honest.
You could make an argument for about – five programs. I mean, Southern Cal being one. I mean,
To reunite with his coach. Yeah, absolutely. Fantastic.
He's a DC guy. I mean, Mike Locksley might be.
Locksley's a good coach, but is Talia going to still be there?
He might be going pro. Here's the thing, Felder. If I said, "Hey, man, you're taking five quarterbacks ahead of Caleb Williams next year,"
for what, the 2023 draft?
No, I'm just saying, like, you think he's overrated.
It's not that I think he's overrated. I think that people don't understand that there are flaws, and that's the part that makes me frustrated, is failure to recognize flaws.
Sure. Yeah. He's not perfect, but man.
You know, what happens is, and Felder, you know this, some guys are so highly rated coming out of high school that they have to prove to us they're not as good as that. And there's other players that are underrated coming out of high school, and they have to prove how good they are over and over and over again. And it's a problem because it hurts some of these kids. I'm going to give you guys two great examples.
How long
did Joe Burrow wait, and how long did the Patriots quarterback right now?
Well, here's the thing.
Tell me his name. Why am I forgetting his
Mac
name?
Mac Jones.
Mac Jones. Those guys had to sit and learn behind really, really good quarterbacks. And when they got their chance to play, they looked polished, didn't they? They kind of looked like they were ready to go. We pushed a lot of these guys, whether it's in college as freshmen, and sometimes they get away with it. Sometimes these guys get away with it because they're playing on a team that has so much talent that they can kind of hide them a little bit. But then we do the same thing in the NFL. We take these guys that it was so funny, you guys. Bill Cowher was on with Peyton Manning and Eli Manning Monday Night Football the other night. And he was talking about, and I don't know if these quarterbacks are the right ones, but they were talking about Roethlisberger and Eli and Philip Rivers. Because I think they might have all come out at the same time. Maybe I was hearing it wrong. But one of the things I loved about what he said was when those guys got to the NFL, they were ready to play.
Yeah.
These were four-year guys. These are guys that had experience. These are guys that played a ton of football in college. And when they got to the NFL, they were ready. And we've seen it. Some guys aren't ready in the NFL, and some guys are more ready. But you need to, that, like you pointed it out, I don't think there's a more important position in sports right now than quarterback coaches. You mentioned Georgia. If you're going to go to a school and you're a QB, you better know you're going to get a good quarterback coach, because, man, does that matter.
Yeah. One, Roethlisberger reference. UNC played him when I was a junior in high school. And when I got there, so there's still guys on the team that played against him. They thought he was better than Philip Rivers. And they were like, he's the best. Because we played Miami of Ohio. And they were like, he was dicing us up. It was unbelievable. And you get that. But then I also, my freshman year, we played Philip Rivers. I think it was his senior year. And he carved up our best players. And it was remarkable. So get two experience with two of those guys that you mentioned. It's crazy. But you need a good quarterbacks coach, and you need which college football is leaning so much harder into recruiting than coaching, and it's leaning into making the game easier versus asking people to do things the hard way. There's someone I'm very curious to see what Butch Davis's next job is. And he doesn't need a next job, probably. He's made enough money to retire and just be done. But if I'm someone that wants a defense and a defensive line specifically that plays football the right way, I want to give him a phone call.
Sure.
Yeah. Because one of the big things that he does is he dings guys for athletic plays. He does, and that's just to clarify, if you do it wrong but get a good result.
Yep.
Based on your athleticism, he's still going to chastise you. He's going to make you do it the right way. He's going to make you, he's going to make you run the hump and dip your shoulder. He's going to make you set up your post hand. He's going to make you do your long arm. And if you don't do it that way, you just can kind of get by with your athleticism. You're going to get dinged still. That's not a positive grade. And I see there's too many coaches that let guys, and I see it all the time when I watch defensive backs play, and maybe this is a product of being a slow guy, but when I see defensive backs stop their feet in press and they don't get hands on in press, the whole point of playing press is to get hands on and to reroute the guy.
It's over if you don't.
But they're fast enough that they can outrun the guy to the point, so they don't get an actual, they don't give up a throw. But if you're not going to get hands on, and if you're not going to reroute, especially guys playing cover two, if you're playing cover two and you don't push the guy flat, you're basically you're butt fucking the safety.
Hey Felder, first of all, that was fantastic. I was just, I'm not used to these explicit shows, so I appreciate you.
I'm sorry.
People like that. No, it's all good, buddy. So here's what I love about this. So I gave a speech to my students the other day about, let's be honest, eighth graders in U.S. history, most of them are like, why the heck do I have to learn this stuff?
Yeah.
And I tell them all the time, I said, it's not really about learning this stuff. It's learning how to do the work I'm asking you to do correctly. It's learning how to work hard and study the material. It's learning how to set up your paper properly. It's learning how to, and they look at you all the time like, why does this matter? I go, how many slackers in the world have asked that same question? Why do I have to do this right? Why do I have to do this? And it's like, because you're learning how to do things correct way. And you just gave a perfect example of why we've both seen it. And Steven, you've seen it covering football. There are guys that you watch in practice and you're like, why is that guy not playing? Like we had a defensive back, and I won't say his name, at UCLA this year, because he ended up having a really, really good year, but he wasn't playing at the beginning of the year. And right. Most of us were wondering why. And what I appreciate is the fact that from all I know, the coaches told him, you know, unless you start playing hero ball, stop playing hero ball,
yeah,
like you're talking about, and trying to just be an athlete, which, by the way, I loved. I knew what you were talking about as soon as you mentioned what you said first, because I see it in Pop Warner. I see it. Mm-hmm. I see it in college. I see it in high school. These coaches will yell at you if you don't succeed. But even if you did it right and you just get beat. And I always look at the coaches and say, you do realize that kid just got beat because the other player's better. He did everything we asked right. him to do, so why are you yelling at him? And they look at me because we need to win. I'm like, you're an idiot. You're a frustrated athlete who has no clue. And then when they succeed and they did everything wrong,
yep.
and they get praised for it. And by the way, you know this. It happens all the time. I mean, mm-hmm. coaches, come on. You've got to be better than that. Like, when you actually got – like, you were kind of grunted, I believe – it may. Yeah. I love that because I feel the same way. I get so sick and tired of coaches yelling, do it again, do it again, do it again. I'm like, first of all, where's the coaching? What are they doing again? What did they do wrong? And then once it works, because you have some elite running back that like bounces it outside and doesn't even hit the hole they're supposed to, you're like, that's the way I want it done. I'm like, you're a moron. Yeah. And you know how many morons are coaching our kids across America right now?
A lot.
It's a problem. A huge
problem. You know Hartzell coached soccer, right?
Well,
yeah, I might be coming back in the spring too. Based on the lack of coaching I saw from the Gorillas last year, I might be making a return to the pitch.
You can host the best backyard barbecue when you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well, inside to outside. Repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
Well, I'll tell you what. I'm gonna jump in. I'm gonna spin this forward
to the national championship
game to Monday night. All right, look, we're gonna be in Indianapolis. The gang is getting together. We'll be able to talk, you know, just all day, all week about Alabama, Georgia. Here's my question for you guys, Felder. You get first crack at this.
Mm-hmm.
Based on what you saw in the semis, Alabama over Cincy, Georgia over Michigan, convincingly, both of those games. Mm-hmm. Ratings suck too, by the way. So you guys are right about that.
But who? Like that's because it's a bunch of people that don't give a shit about football.
Let's keep it on the rails. Which of those two teams that's playing on Monday night do you have more concern about, more questions about, based on how they performed in the semis?
Georgia.
Why?
They still can't cover people vertically. I don't know the names, but 11, 9, 29, 16, they can't cover vertically. When you give up a 43-yard pass, a 42, a 45, a 35-yard pass, when you're doing all those things, you give up a 25-yard pass to a tight end, when you're doing all those, you can't cover vertically.
Same defense that allowed, 450 yards passing?
Yeah.
Against Bryce Young in the SEC championship game?
Yeah. I just don't – why should I trust them? I'll look – you know what? I'll look up the roster so I can – I don't need to name names. The point is,
I have it in front of me, but you don't need them. Yeah,
I don't need to name names, but those are the guys. Like those guys, why would I trust them? Why? Why would I trust them down the field? It basically what it means is that Nolan Smith and N'Kobe Dean are going to have to be heroes to get to the quarterback and shut everything down. And I think N'Kobe Dean, no disrespect to Will Anderson, I think they're probably player one and player two in this football game in terms of who are the best players. N'Kobe Dean, did you see the play, Wayne, where they're in man coverage, they flex out wide, they flex Blake Corum out wide, and N'Kobe Dean's on the numbers at 10 yards. They send Corum in motion. Dean goes from 10 yards on the numbers on the right side of the field and makes a tackle for loss at the numbers on the left side of the field.
Yeah.
That's insane. You shouldn't be able to do that. But the thing with me, and I guess this is the scary part, and this is the part of why I have more confidence in Alabama. I've said this before, but I've been racking my brain about how Georgia wins. And I just can't imagine that Nick Saban hasn't thought of everything that I've thought about.
Right.
And Georgia Georgia feels like me. They're too smart for their own good. Because those guys are going to sit together, and I don't know if it's going to be drinking beers or eating subs or whatever, but over this course of this week, they've been sitting together watching film, on not just during meetings, but on their off time. And they're going to know everything that Alabama's done. And the problem is, when you know too much, the other team doing something different really screws you. And that's what the second quarter was in the SEC championship game. Remember, we talked to Roddy, and Roddy was like, it's a coverage bust. And I went back and watched, a bunch of Alabama games, and it wasn't a bust. What it was Alabama in tight bunch in tight bunch, they run a stop, they run an out and up, and they run an over. And then Alabama decided, we're going to run the out. We're going to run the over, but we're going to run a deep dig instead of a stop. But Georgia reacted to what they've already seen. And that play led to the biggest touchdown in that game. And so they keep changing all these things because Alabama knows that they know what they're expecting already. And Alabama got them out of man coverage and got them into zone coverage. And then Alabama and Bryce Young, you mentioned him on the run. Not good pass protection. He evades.
Yep.
And then as soon as he evades, N'Kobe Dean is like, I have the flat. I'm in the flat. Oh, the quarterback's broken contain. I'm going to go to the quarterback. And what does he do? Quick pitch to Brian Robinson. First down. You make every choice wrong, and that's the part that Nick Saban understands. And so I just don't trust Kirby Smart to make that choice. I just am – I'm on their side. It's not that I'm on their side. I can't bet against them, and it's just – it's crazy. Because Michigan was the perfect team for Georgia to play. Because Michigan was a team that they put the best thing they could do on film. And it was against Ohio State. Mm-hmm. And so they tried to go back to the well, and then there's N'Kobe Dean calling out all your plays.
By the way, Felder, shout out to you for talking about N'Kobe Dean in, like, I don't know, like 2018? I feel like you've been banging on the N'Kobe Dean drum for quite a few seasons now. He's spectacular. Dude's made a ton of money just in the last couple of games, too. I mean, he's been amazing. He's phenomenal.
He's amazing.
By the way, guys, that's a great point about all this. Like, we always talk about, I know everybody was freaking out about Matt Corral not opting out and, like, twisting his ankle. And,
yeah.
Because people, like, lose their minds over a football injury that he's going to be okay. You know, he's going to be okay.
Yeah, he'll be fine.
We could talk about that other day. But, like, if you're who was the player? I had a thought just now and I lost it. There was a player who played in one of the bowl games in absolute – well, like, Jaylen someone Smith. Like Njigba Smith, right? Smith and Jigba. Like, so he plays so good in that game.
Oh yeah.
His stock was already high, but it's even higher now. Yeah. And now they look at, like, this guy had a game like of the ages. Granted, Utah was their third guy.
Because it was Garrett Wilson, Chris Olave, and then him.
But exactly. And it's funny because the only reason why I'm bringing this up is, like, you know, sometimes opt out works for some people, but sometimes opting in actually works for some people too, because they play so well in these bowl games that it raises them up. But I don't disagree with you, Felder. I actually, you know, if I had to, I'd pick Alabama too, because we saw this. I thought Georgia played an actual more complete game against Michigan, and we also know that we may have been, and I'm gonna include me in this, the Michigan game against Ohio State may have been a little misleading, because we even saw it in the Rose Bowl that Ohio State's defense isn't very good
at all.
So, you know, Michigan got to do what Michigan wants to do, right? They got to be able to run the ball and do all the stuff that they didn't do, and they couldn't do that against Georgia. I do think Georgia will play better. And I don't know what you guys think about this, but, like, I'm a fan of all these quarterbacks. I love what you said about Bryce Young, and we talked about this earlier. I think when he is engaged and willing to run, and I know that sounds weird, I've watched a lot of quarterbacks who are mobile over the years. I remember Brett Hundley is one of my favorite quarterbacks at UCLA. I love the guy. But he also had some moments where he decided, I'm not going to run. I'm going to show everybody I could be a passer. And I used to go, Brett, dude, you've got this gift, buddy. you're big, you're strong, you're elite. It's okay. I mean, he was a Jalen Hurts type guy, built like that, right? Just go, dude. Nowadays, players are running more because I think they're seeing that's being utilized in the NFL. Like, it's not being frowned upon like it used to be. But I think when Bryce Young is engaged and wants to run, that makes him, like, ridiculously scary. And I imagine in this game he'll do that. I think Kirby Smart and company will come up with a game plan. But let's be honest, the first time they played, Stetson Bennett was bad.
Yep.
Like, I'm not going to say his team helped him out very much, but he was bad. But here's what I love about that young man. First of all, it doesn't seem like when you talk to any of the players or when you talk to any of the coaches that any of them are doubting him at all.
No.
They love the guy. He's their leader. If you watched him in the interviews after the Michigan game, that dude is as cool as they come. Like, he's just so good. Like everything he says and the questions he thinks about him, and he's like, I mean, the guy looks kind of like Shia LaBeouf. I mean, he's just like this little curly-haired. He doesn't really look the part. Right. But he is the kind of guy that
You ever been to Athens, Felder? I mean, you know, it's
I mean, but he is the kind of guy that he was really good in that game, you guys. Don't get me off course on what I'm trying to say here. He threw a really good deep ball in that game. He took some chances. He threw with touch. He looked – and remember, this Michigan defense, we can look back and say, oh, maybe they weren't that good.
They
were pretty good all year.
Those guys got their shit kicked in.
They did, but he played so much better in that game. Now, granted, I know it wasn't Alabama, but I expect Georgia to play a better game. I expect them to be ready. They've dealt with it once. They've got to watch the film. I don't think this is going to be Oregon, Utah, too. I don't think Alabama's just going to destroy them. But again, I agree with everything you guys are saying. Hard to go against Nick Saban, because just not only the stuff that he does as a coach, but the way he handles the preparation. Like, I think sometimes Kirby Smart, like the whole "don't pour Gatorade on me, we can't celebrate yet." Like, I think sometimes that whole mantra, get your players uptight. Like maybe you guys just need to go out and play. Let's have a game plan.
I don't want to speak for you, Felder. I don't think you're mental voodoo guy. Like, you don't buy into that, right? But man, I'm telling you, there is a lot of pressure on this Georgia program.
There really is a ton of pressure on this team.
And that's fine. Listen, there should be pressure. You don't get to show up and have people tell you you're one of the best defenses of all time and then get your brains blown out.
Right.
But the big thing for me, what cards do they have left to play?
Yeah.
What cards Because play better isn't an answer.
Hey, they played that. They played that James Cook card.
It's a little bit of an answer.
They played that James Cook card for you, didn't they?
Bingo. That's
yeah. Oh my gosh.
That's but guess what? You show that's the same thing as Michigan against Ohio State, right? They played that misdirection card, and Georgia knew every beat of it. They knew what was coming, and they were ready. And I think that's what I'm getting at is play better is not. They didn't play bad. In the SEC championship game, they got beat.
Stetson Bennett did, you guys. You have to have better quarterback play. You can't have a quarterback but basically seal the Heisman and look as good as – I mean, that game he played against Georgia, Bryce Young, was
but
so
what
good.
Is, what
and Stetson Bennett
do bad?
Was bad. He did it. They threw the ball more in the fourth quarter than they had because they were behind.
Because they were losing.
And he really – to me, he
that's
he
not
just,
playing
he,
bad. That's Alabama he, being better.
Well, that's true, but from a quarterback standpoint – you got to find a way to move the chains. You have to find a way to make more plays. You just do. He threw some balls in that game that were bad. Now, granted, I know you're a defensive guy, so you can definitely chalk that up to the defense
Alabama
did things to him.
But he didn't.
They
he
did
didn't,
a good job. So I'll agree with that, but he does have to play better. If he plays like he did, they have no chance.
But here's the thing. Like, I think Jake Fromm played bad in the SEC championship game, the one that had the Justin Fields fake punt, whatever it was.
Yep.
I think Jake Fromm played bad, missed throws, and slid short on a first down that would have helped him
yep,
seal the
I
game.
Remember that. Yep.
I think he did play bad. I don't think Stetson Bennett played bad. I think that Alabama was the issue here.
I get it.
And when we go through and you look at what he's done and you look at what he's been able to do, I guess, honestly, Wayne, do you think that they can win with Stetson Bennett throwing for 178 yards?
That's going to be tough. I mean, we talked about it. The running backs. Like, do you remember the national championship game a few years ago, the Tua game?
Mm-hmm.
I actually thought Kirby Smart and that, or the Georgia coaching staff in that game, they had two of the best. They had Chubb and they had Sony Michelle.
Mm-hmm.
And run them, please. More. I mean, it's like at some, if you've got something working like that and they don't have that talent at running back, although, you know, who knows, but you've got to find a way to do things your way. And if that means that your game plan, see, cause I love this because, you know, you're a defensive guy and you're talking about the Alabama defense making a quarterback look bad. And I can promise you, I played against the elite mid nineties, you know, Nebraska teams that made me look like I didn't know what the hell I was doing. So I do get that. I get that happens sometimes. We're just like, dang, these guys are just – the receivers are either covered or I'm not really sure what they just did, or they're disguising stuff in a certain way, or, man, that the big defensive end is always in my face. Like, you never can get comfortable, which for a quarterback is miserable. But I will battle that with – as an offensive coordinator, you have to do a better job of creating opportunities for your quarterback to succeed. And I think that's a game plan thing too. I think that Georgia has to do a better job – of calling a game, and sometimes that means just flipping the field. You know, in a game like this, we have two really good defenses, sometimes that means you get two or three first downs and punt.
What is
because we all know
mean?
that matters.
What does flipping the field mean if the other team can score on one play?
Well, no, I agree with that. But we've like you said, I know that the weakness that you're talking about is the Georgia. And who knows what they do? Maybe they play deeper coverage. Maybe they want to risk. Like, why not make Alabama dink and dunk? Don't give them the opportunities. I don't know what the answer is. But these coaches that watch all the film. Yeah, I know.
But wait, I'm going to talk real numbers, and I know you've already looked at these real numbers. But like, he threw the ball 48 times against Alabama.
Which, by the way, how much more was that than any other game that he played in this year?
18 more than the Michigan game, and then 19 more.
That's, by the way, a recipe for a loss every single time.
And that's what I'm getting at. Because which quarterback in this game is happy to throw the ball 40 times? Which quarterback in this game is excited to score 40 points? Which coach is excited to score 40 points?
We're agreeing, by the way, that Alabama's
better. Yeah, we're not arguing.
Team.
I'm
agreeing with you.
Hope.
I just think that there are ways through. Yeah, I think there are ways through quarterback screens. There's certain things you can do with formations. There's things you can do, and offensive coordinators can be very, very creative. Sure. There's things that you can do to protect when? To protect your quarterback, to try to prevent them from having to throw into coverage. Because when you're losing,
you have to,
as a quarterback, when you're losing, you have to throw a lot. You end up you end up taking risks you shouldn't have to take.
If you have to protect your quarterback, is he an asset to your team?
Yeah, but that's we're arguing, but like how bad was like what did Auburn do against Bryce Young?
They played man coverage.
And they sacked Bryce Young like what, 7 times in the first half alone? I mean,
they played man coverage and they got pressure with 4.
What did Texas A&M do?
They played man coverage and they got pressure with 4.
So again, you would hope that this defensive front for Georgia is pretty good, right?
But they're not built like that.
Yeah. Well, again, I'm agreeing that I think Alabama's got a chance to win too. I just think that Georgia's going to come up with a better game plan. I think they'll do a better job on offense. I really do.
Hey, Auburn seven sacks against Alabama. Texas A&M
was a 500 team.
Texas A&M 4 sacks against Alabama.
Iron Bowl. They lost like Iron Bowl win. You throw the record books out for the Iron Bowl. Come on,
no,
you know better.
But Florida. Florida was a terrible team this year.
I'm just saying,
Alabama has shown that they don't, and Bryce Young hasn't been good in every game.
But there's a specific formula that it takes to give their offense problems.
And the personnel for Georgia, what you're saying, doesn't have that.
Exactly. That's what I'm saying.
No, and again, I'm not disagreeing with you. It's kind of fun to argue just for fun. But I do think, I mean, if you can't come up with something better, because did you guys, I'll give you an example. Did you see in the Michigan game, did you guys notice that Michigan at one point looked like they quit?
Yeah.
Did you notice that? I mean, not just the player that stopped. They looked like they were done.
They're demoralized.
They were beaten into submission. I didn't expect to see that, but they all had that deer in the headlights look on their face.
It was
Georgia's better than they played against Alabama the first time.
I think they are.
That's all I'm going to say.
But the point that I make, and I don't think that Alabama's going to blow them out. I think Alabama's going to win. But what I'm saying is that with respect to what you're talking about, with respect to with Michigan in mind, is that this Michigan football team, they've done enough, and they realized, oh, we can't do more. We can't do more. And I'm not going to sit here.
So you're saying that you think the Michigan players went into that game thinking they couldn't win?
No. I think they went in.
I thought it happened around the third quarter.
That's what I was going to say. I don't think they went in thinking they couldn't win. I think they went in thinking we're going to win, and then they were like, oh man, we're getting our brains beat. And I think there's something
you can see it,
which goes back to Georgia calling out their plays.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh, we don't have a changeup, right? Like we can't throw a slider. We don't have any, like we have a fastball and that's what it is. And even though they had minor successes down the line, they didn't have what it take. Like, they didn't have the ability to stress Georgia, what do you have to do? You have to push the ball vertically down the field. Right. You have to create space. You have to create space. You have to do it quickly. And then you have to clear the box and find tiny ways to run the football so that you can stay on schedule. And Michigan couldn't do that. And then it was just like, once you run out your best game plan and then you run out your adjustment game plan and neither one of them work, you're kind of looking around like, we don't have a plan C. And that's just the reality. That's not a knock on them. And they had a really good season. They had a season that they wanted to have. They got to the playoff. That counts. Harbaugh off the hot seat now. Doesn't have to worry about any of this stuff anymore for a couple years. But in that football game with – and you know what else it was? It was the plan A, the plan B stuff. But also, when your best player, Aiden Hutchinson, isn't able to do anything.
Yeah, he couldn't do anything.
Oh, my goodness. Now what?
Yeah, you know, there's a matchup side of this, right? Like we talk about this kind of stuff all the time. Like, there's some – like, it's like a boxing match where you just go up against a guy that, like – you know, it's like Apollo Creed fighting Rocky. He's like, man, he's a southpaw. This is weird. This is awkward. This is something I'm not used to. Apollo was a much better athlete, a much better fighter, but he ran into a style that he couldn't deal with. So, like, sometimes the matchups don't work. I do. I keep bringing up. I brought up Rocky a couple times this year. I don't know why.
Well, Apollo, I think they Rocky, split, right? The first two movies, right? Isn't that how that
he
went?
Beat him in the first fight, and he lost to him in the second fight. But the point is that it was just an awkward matchup.
It's a matchup.
And so the matchup for – but I'm just – this is the thing. I've got to hope that Georgia, as well as they recruit and the athletes that they have
– sure.
I think Alabama's a better team, but I think they have to show a little bit better. They got whooped that last time. Mm-hmm. I think they're going to play better. I still think Alabama's the better team. And you still have to throw into the equation turnovers, interceptions. Like, you know, interesting things are going to happen. I think Georgia probably has more of an ability to have an A, a B, and a C. I know mm-hmm. people think they don't because they say they look at Stetson Bennett and say, eh. I say he has a chance to play enough plays.
It's not Stetson Bennett to me. It's Kirby Smart.
Kirby.
Well, okay, there's another good point. I don't disagree with that either.
By the way, you know who's favored in this game, don't y'all?
Georgia.
Yeah.
By what? One, 2.5?
Baffling. They're a 3-point favorite.
Yeah.
What was the score? I should know this, Stephen. What was the score in the last game?
Oh, the SEC championship game?
Yeah.
A lot to a little, and Georgia was a 3-point favorite in that
really,
one, too.
But when you watched it, it just felt like Alabama was a lot better.
41-24.
Georgia led 10-0. By the way.
Oh, by the way, Wayne, I wanted to drop this anecdote in there. My first game at UNC, we had a guy named Dexter Reed, safety, All-American, and we were playing Florida State. And this, you want to talk about the moment when you're like, oh, we can't win? Greg Jones popped his top. Like, Greg Jones in the open field with like a forearm. Greg Jones, the Florida State running back. A little forearm to Dexter Reed's head. Dex fell back into another player. His helmet came flying off, and we were like, "Oh God, our best player just got destroyed." Well, let's make quick time of this, folks, so we can go out tonight.
Wayne, speaking of going out tonight, Wayne, it sounds like you're going to spend the weekend in Indianapolis barking at people. That's what it sounds like. It sounds like you're on Team Georgia. It sounds like you're leaning dogs, baby.
No.
Yeah, you are.
You know what's crazy is that it's so hard to get to go against what Alabama's been and what they've done. I think Georgia's going to play better. I thought they were terrible. I even emailed or sent you a text that I thought that this was a SEC conspiracy. That Georgia kind of laid down and allowed Alabama to win that game so they could get two teams into the playoffs. I don't know if I actually believe that or not. You know, I probably don't believe that, but it's just kind of fun to say. But they looked terrible. Like, I really thought that was just, they looked terrible in that game.
And they jump out to a 10-0 lead, and you're saying that maybe
had them right where they want them, Felder. Had them right
Then they just let it get away, so the SEC to get two teams in. I mean, no, I really don't believe that, but it was just I wanted Georgia to win. And it's not because I hate Alabama. I don't even have Alabama fatigue. I'm fine. And by the way, you guys, let's be honest. The two best teams got in.
I agree. And I appreciate watching Alabama. Like, it's to me.
No, I do too.
There's something unique about watching a team, especially this specific Alabama team. Like, I don't know if you've noticed this, because I know you're busy like with UCLA stuff. But like, have you noticed the way that Saban has talked about them and the way he's talked to them, and he's been so kind and gentle with this team because he recognizes that just like he can't have them go off the rails. Like, I need to be nice to these guys because this isn't one of my old teams where I have a bunch of football robot psychos that are going to be okay with getting yelled at. I have to be very nice to these guys.
It's funny that you would think that a 70-year-old coach would definitely be the old dog, you know, not learning any new tricks, right?
Yeah.
And yet he's one of the greatest, if not the greatest, probably, I don't even know if you can argue that anymore, greatest of all time.
Yeah.
And he is the greatest of all time because, like, you know, you've got to be able to adjust with the times.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he knows that players are going to leave now. He knows that people are saying that Harbaugh, you know, talking about going to the NFL, maybe because of the the modern era of college football for a coach right now, the way things that are going with the portal and money and all that stuff, it's crazy. It's absolutely crazy, and it's going to be very hard to manage. But Nick Saban always seems to have a calm about it. And as you've pointed out, you know, I've always liked him with the media. Sometimes he, you know, because let's be honest, as a person that interviews people, and I do sideline interviews all the time, I interview coaches after games. I even joked around hosting the UCLA banquet. I looked right at Chip Kelly and I go, hey, I know it's hard to believe, but I ask stupid questions sometimes too. And like, we all ask stupid questions. I don't know about you guys, but sometimes when I watch these reporters at these games and I listen to them, I cringe. I'm like, oh God, what? That was like the dumbest question in the history of mankind. And like, but it's very hard to do. But these coaches have like huge personalities. But I think Nick's a great interview. I think he's funny. I think he can bark. I think it's pretty obvious when he's trying to send a message to his team. But as you pointed out, he kind of knows his group. It's like you guys have kids, right? So like for me, my two boys, one of them, I look at him funny and you can tell that he's like, sorry, dad. And the other one like puts his chest down and be like, I'm right. You're wrong. Like one of them wants to fight me all the time and the other one just kind of listens and goes, okay, I'll try and get better. When you're a coach, you have to know that. And as Felder so eloquently just pointed out, like he kind of knows what he's dealing with right now. He knows the times have changed. He knows team's different. And guess what? He's right back where he seems to always be. What did they say? Like 9 out of like 13 years or something like that, they've been in the championship. Is that true?
Yeah, it's unbelievable. It's unreal.
It's crazy.
It's unreal. Hartzell, what about you? You got a defiant kid and a compliant kid?
I have two very different sons. I love them both, and I love them both equally. By the way, real quick on the Saban and the times they are a changing bit. Jahmyr Gibbs, portal running back, going to be starting in Tuscaloosa next year. And Henry To'o, right? Like, hey man, you want to leave Tennessee? You're like the top rated player defensively in the nation coming out of high school. Why don't you come to Tuscaloosa, man? We got you. Like it's amazing. It is amazing. Boys, I want to set the table for what we got coming up this weekend, okay? Because this is the last show that we're doing before we pack our bags.
Did you guys get your Clear app done?
I got to work on that.
I'm having the hardest time. I was just having a hard time just getting there.
Yes, check your email. There are instructions. I actually feel good about what the CFP's got laid out in terms of like media. Like COVID policies and whatnot. Like, you know, you gotta follow the rules, man. You can't just show up and think they're gonna let you in.
I've got a picture of my vaccination card. Is that good enough?
That helps, but you gotta do the app. Felder's right. There's like a thing.
I just did the app today. Yeah. I have that.
You just did it today? Well, I was having a hard time. Just every time I clicked on it, it sent me somewhere else. Then I had to download this. So I'm in the process right now.
Why don't you have one of your kids help you out, Wayne? I know it's frustrating.
Was it pretty easy for you, Felder?
I know that technology thing is.
I've got a leg up because we use Clear I work in the United Center, and so we use Clear there. So I already have it. I just had to add another location to mine.
You might have to set up a tutorial for Wayne. But look, boys, we're packing our bags. We're going to Indianapolis. Serber and I are driving up from North Carolina.
You're driving?
Yeah. Are you joking? Yeah. I'm not getting on a plane. No chance. No chance.
Yeah, let's pray that no flights are canceled.
Wayne is flying from California.
It's going to be cold.
Roddy's driving up from Georgia. It's going to be very cold. We've checked the weather. It's not Chicago cold, Felder, but it's going to be cold, bro. And look, we got Felder in attendance one of these days. Like, you're going to be making the trip. You're driving over. So
I'm driving down Saturday. We're going to get to do an in-person show. We might do two in-person shows. So I'm driving down.
Nice.
And I got an extra bed in my room, bro. I mean, I got double twins or double queens. I don't know what I got, but I got, you know, if you need to stack up.
Server's in one and then Felder in
Hartzell. No. Server's got his own room.
No, I'm in the same bed with Hartzell.
Hey, there he is.
Hey, what's up, Serbs?
I told the guys you were unavailable tonight.
I've been here for a while. My wife went to bed early.
And my wife.
And my wife. And I decided to just sit here and listen to you guys talk ball. I'm glad that we earned the E because Felder decided to talk about anal sex.
you were around for that part. Okay.
Yeah, I was around for that part. Yeah, well, you know, I've already got the Art 19 thing ready to go to publish the episode first thing in the morning. And I was like, well, I guess I have to choose explicit because, you know, butt fucking.
Well, it's funny you mentioned Art 19. Here's the ways that people can interact with the show, all right? At CSNowTweets on Twitter. You can follow all of our co-hosts on Twitter as well, at In the Bleachers for Felder, at Wayne Cook UCLA for, obviously, Wayne at L_Cerberino. I'm at Stephen Hartzell, at Roddy Jones20. We're all on Twitter, all right? Download the podcast. We're on Instagram, College Sports Now IG. We're also going to be taking over the Varsity Network Instagram feed. We got a lot of stuff going on. We got guests out the wazoo. It's going to be a good time, boys. So let's just get there safely. Let's have fun. And let's watch Wayne Cook bark at grown adults for a weekend. It should be fun.
You're driving your car?
So my car is my late scratch. My car is a late scratch. There've been some mechanical issues that have been identified.
I did not know that.
I almost died, Felder. You believe that? I almost died.
No. This was in the works to get looked at before the trip, but my mechanic has advised me that the car is, quote, not safe, end quote, to drive. We got to go up and over mountains, man. We got to go through West Virginia. So, I mean, this is not just like, you know, like a little jaunt up Main Street here.
Yeah, you're just going, what are you going, 77 up to
71, and then we're hanging a left. We're going around. Yeah, we got a lot going on, man.
West Virginia, just don't Kentucky, break Ohio. Down.
So we're going to be renting, like, I don't even know, man, like a Suzuki or some shit, like a tiny little SUV.
I fucking hope they upgrade us to like a Challenger. Or a Camaro or something awesome.
I told
you don't want that.
No, we need an SUV. We got gear, man. We're bringing helmets. We're bringing helmets, dude.
They got big back seats. We're all good.
What do I need to bring?
Well, I mean, the credential will be there for you, and then you know, just bring yourself. You don't need to bring anything.
What do you mean? Bring cans? Need to bring my headset?
No, we got a headset for you.
Come on, Felder. What do you think?
Just bring, what's that water you drink, Felder?
We're industry liquid leaders.
Bring a case of
audio
Liquid Death. I
want to
try it.
Here's your checklist. I'll bring some Liquid Death. Here's your checklist. Yourself, shoes to wear at the stadium, driving shoes.
We're not going to the stadium.
Liquid Death. Well, or at the convention center. Shoes to wear at the convention center, shoes
and
to wear
takes.
Driving.
Bro, Liquid you're Death. Telling me that you're not even going to upgrade it to Tahoe?
I'd be shocked if we're in anything remotely
Suzuki.
Bigger than like a RAV4.
Samurai.
It's going to be driving a Nissan Rogue.
Probably.
I'm okay with that.
That's a good call.
As long
those
as it gets
are
us there.
Good.
Yeah, I'm
pretty
fine
good.
With that.
Right. I will tell you this on a very serious note, be careful in Ohio.
What? Speed? Speed trap?
Yeah. They love pulling over out of state people.
I appreciate
they got the radar, don't they? They got the radar.
That's
like
Virginia, those fuckers. Yeah.
So does Ohio. Yeah.
Here's the thing. We're going to get there safe. We're not in any rush. Wayne, you got to get there safe. Roddy's showing up at
midnight.
Dude,
I don't get there until like 11 o'clock at night.
Yeah, both of you guys are showing up at midnight. So much for the team dinner I had planned on Friday.
On Friday.
Out back it is.
Which one of you guys is picking me up from the airport?
The Uber.
Yeah, bro. You're not. Well, I'm not. It's called a ride share. I'll be asleep, bro. But
I'll just rent. Can I just rent a car and expense it?
Here's the plan. No, no. Come on, Wayne.
That's what I usually do. I mean, what's wrong?
We're going to be doing a show Saturday. We're going to be doing a show Monday. We're going to be doing a show Tuesday. So three shows, bunch of stuff on social media.
I'm popping down on Saturday. Saturday, I'm going to get in the car. My plan is to get in the car Saturday around 8 o'clock, 7:30, 8 o'clock.
How long is that drive?
It's 2.5 hours.
Okay.
Nothing.
If I need you there earlier, I'll let you know.
Yeah, you let me know. I'm going to pop in the car, get in the car. I'm upset. You know what I'm upset about is Saturday is the 8th. The 8th is the first day that you can throw Christmas trees away at the park tree recycling event. Yeah.
You're going to miss that.
You can't just put them out in the street in your green trash can like we do out here in California.
No. I got
to
take my tree.
I actually have
to
saw mine in half.
What kind of tree fits in a trash can?
You have to saw it up. It takes a lot of work. Like, if they're really big, they let you. But our, like, garbage guys sometimes will just look at it and be like, no, man, I'm not picking that up. You need to cut it up and put it in your trash can.
Yeah, you guys should know that. I mean, California should know trees better than that. Come on. Unbelievable.
Yeah, it's true. Yeah, good call.
So, I'm going to have to wait until California. The 9th.
Damn, that's a whole other day. Whole extra day of having your Christmas tree.
I know. And I also told my wife, I said, I might just get a hotel like on the way back.
Damn, you staying that long all day? You staying all day?
I mean, I'm coming down. I figure we're going to do, I want to be at least do a segment for the Monday show, right?
Nah, that's a good idea.
Well, listen, we've got a production. Did I not send you the production calendar?
You did, and then I had to tell you that I wasn't coming down on Monday.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. I'm glad you caught that. Yeah, that would have thrown things off for the week. So, folks, you get the idea. We're going to be there. We're going to be interviewing people, and we're going to have a lot of fun. And we've got fingers crossed, a really good game on Monday night between Alabama and Georgia. So, boys, travel safe or a blowout. Either way, it's going to be a football game, and someone's going to win a national championship. So, folks, travel safe. You guys travel safe. Folks, listen to the show. That's all I got.
Keep going.
Just say Roll Tide and it's over.
Roll Tide.
1, 2, 3, 4. Those are numbers, but you already knew that. If you want to know what number you're going to pay each month for your car, use Kelley Blue Book My Wallet on AutoTrader. They're really good at numbers. AutoTrader.